Board time, July 31st.
So, commissioners, thank you for the indulgence in changing the agenda. Gordy and Chris and Oliver are here to voice their, I guess would be called concerns about the wording versus the intent of the board with regard to the wineries ordinance. So okay. Who do I turn this over to?
Commissioners, if you sure. indulge us.
Sure. So we met yesterday, and one of the things that happens when we try to make changes on the fly is when we actually go through and read what it is that we did. We want to make sure that we got it right. And so we found a couple of things. I fired an email off to Chris and said, can we really say this, or did I capture what it is that your intent mm-hmm. In terms of yesterday? And there are a couple yeah. of things that we just didn't want to drag this out. So I got a hold of Bill, and he said, come up, let's just see if we can't.
Yeah. You were able to view the CCTV video, okay. So there's no question about what that said, right?
Have not. I don't even know if it's been posted. That's our backstop if we can't get to where we think we need to be, which I think we can. So in front of you, I brought a copy of the ordinance as you adopted it yesterday, and I also passed out the email from Chris. So do you want to walk through these, or
let's go to page 2?
Yeah, page 2 of the ordinance.
And this is not, my comment on this is not something that was raised at the hearing yesterday. It was something that was raised by Chris Horn in a conversation with me yesterday.
So on the top of page 2, we have under B1 applicability, we talk about wineries are allowed as an agriculture use, which they are, and is exempt from land use review. And the concern there is, they don't need a permit to operate the winery, but there may be other kinds of review from the land use perspective that are required. And that's the concern, just in the top place there that's flagged.
Okay. So this is kind of an appendage from a previous thing, and we haven't really focused on this lately.
Yes. Correct. When we went through and looked at this, Chris said, that probably is not exactly true because they might need mm-hmm. to do something with habitat, and that would be a land use review.
So do you have a, I think what would be helpful for us when we do consider this, and we need to be able to a public meeting out there, right, in order to do this, or can we consider here?
We're just shuffling words right now.
Okay.
I think we can something
you
do this.
What words would
it
would
depends.
Be?
It depends on the extent of the change. If it's a significant change, then it would have to go through a public hearing, and otherwise it can be done on consent.
Do you have a recommended solution?
I would just dump the "and is exempt from land use review."
To put a period after the word "use,"
strike it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Subject that's good.
Now that language is going away also.
Right.
So the B1 would be a winery as defined in the section, et cetera, is allowed as an agricultural use.
Yep.
Get that.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great. All right. Good. Over on page 3. Again, this is where we may need to go back and look at the tape under I there. This is how I heard it, and I want to make sure that this is what actually was said. So. That and again, these statements in each of these sections start out with the word "a winery shall," and so that's why it starts with "produce no more than 50 dB of noise if the property line is measured with a DBC filtering device." So that's the first comment, and the question is that the intent of the board? Did we capture
that's
correctly?
Correct.
My understanding was that in addition, the noise level was to go down by 10 decibels at 10 p.m.
That's required in the WAC table already.
Well,
but this differs slightly from the WAC table.
What we specified is that the WAC would be the standard, and table 2A would be replaced with a single value, which is 50 dBc, and C mode filtering would be specified instead of A.
And I think this says all that, except that the table does have the does have the decrease in the allowable noise level. So I think Gordy's language captures all that,
well,
except for the decrease at night.
I read through that WAC and also, I guess, an accompanying document that basically said it encouraged counties to adopt their own sound limitation code. And in this case, it sounds like we may be replacing the WAC code with this one statement.
And we cannot do that. The WAC code, what you're doing is modifying Table 2A for the winery's ordinance. So we can't replace the WAC code, it's the WAC code.
What I mean to say is that we would go by this one value, which doesn't say anything about setting it back at between 10 and 7, in place of the WAC code.
Okay, so
I know we're not replacing the WAC code, but our intent was to adopt the WAC, or just to go by the WAC code, which is one modification, which was the Table 2A. It had a table of different decibels for different class A, B, and C. And the idea there is that we would replace that table with 50, because that WAC code stated the time and the amount of cutback that would also be applied. Because if we adopt this, there's a potential confusion that there's nothing here that says it should cut back an additional 10 dB at 10 o'clock. And I just want to make sure that it still does.
State regulation.
Okay, because I interpreted this.
State regulation reduces it farther than that.
Yeah. Well,
correct.
We want to make sure that the state regulation, this is the only part we're changing, is that table. The rest of it applies, including the setback. Because what could happen is they could say, I'm at 50 dB, and it's 2 in the morning. All it says is 50 dB. There's nothing in there that says it's fast.
So it's 50 dB up until 10 o'clock, and then the WAC table 2A applies the rest of the time.
I wouldn't say that. I would say specifically to be reduced to 40 dBC at 10 p.m.
Okay, we can do that.
Which can increase and to 50 at whatever it is.
To be reduced to 40 between 10 a.m. and
10 p.m.
10 p.m. and 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I'm confused about it because we're not importing Table 2A into here, so I think we can say we rely on that table, except that we're changing the standards in the table to be 50 and then 40 and then back to 50.
Yes, and perhaps we should say so in there. The WAC reference applies with this one exception in what you just stated, 50 dropping back to 40 between 10 and 7.
Okay.
Because that also has other things that talk about peak levels and duration, and we want that to apply, right?
Like a footnote. Okay, so we want to include... Okay.
And in other words, the WAC code applies in every way except for where we want it specifically modifying here.
The language in that in Table 2A.
Instead of the ABC with the 9 different decibel
right.
levels,
mm-hmm.
it's
right.
a single,
yes.
and then the step down.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's what, if we add 50 and then 40,
that
covers it. Okay, so
yes.
dropping it down the extra 10 is mm-hmm. is what we did, what we left
yeah.
out here. Okay. The next sentence. Sorry.
Go ahead.
You mean the next page?
Oh, go ahead. No, for the next sentence in that same page. This is one, Commissioner, you asked to be put in, and in light of what we just did in the previous sentence, we don't think we need this sentence. The special event permits do not grant permission to exceed state standards. There's no harm in leaving it in, but we don't know what it means in the context of you establishing a specific noise.
Well, it's by default. We don't have to say that we're not granted an exception because we're not granted an exception. So that becomes a redundant statement.
That's
right.
Correct. We would propose to scratch it.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's all right. Very good. We're on the page. Were you here for the first part of this, Marty? For your benefit, we talked about over on page 1 under applicability, putting the period after applicability, just scratching and is exempt from land use, you're just putting the period after the
sure.
period use.
Okay.
Right? And then again on food service, want to make sure we captured what it is here. I talked with Gary, I'll think a little bit about after the word. In compliance with public health regulations, the language was with regard to level one and level two complexity is how I noted it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a licensed winery will be allowed food service, and he thought it would be better to say, in compliance with public health regulations, a licensed winery would be allowed level one or level two food service.
Just
as a wording.
Uh-huh.
As an accessory use to the winery and within the limits of state law, and then we added and GMA.
Including, yeah. Should be including GMA, not and, because GMA is part of.
Okay, so let me read that again. So it would say on the top of page three under food service, in compliance with public health regulations, a licensed winery will be allowed level one or level two food services as an accessory use to the winery within the limits of state law, including GMA.
That sounds like we're allowing level one and level two before state laws. Level one and level two are in level two are where you make a sandwich on site.
Correct.
And you're saying that we're going to allow that.
Correct. That's what our direction. That's what we heard from the board yesterday.
Okay. Well, what we're trying to do is to ensure that the state law, we're not granting an exception to state law that it says within the limits of. That's what the intent there.
Yes.
No. Well, that's correct. We talked about allowing them to make it.
Correct.
So we're good.
Anything more than that would have to be understood.
A level three is a full-blown restaurant with all kinds of menu options.
And so the only other comment that I would have is we, talking with Chris, we probably ought to define a food service, if we want to define what a food service establishment is. Maybe we don't need to now.
I think we deleted the language that said food service establishment.
Yeah,
we
did.
We're fine. I don't think we need to.
Okay, because at one point we thought if we're going to allow restaurants, we would have to put those in as specific uses in our use table.
Yeah. The public health regulations already cover that.
Yes, they do. Okay, I think we can work with that. It's going to be up to Chris to decide how significant those changes are. Our options are to bring it back on consent on Tuesday, which we're hoping to do.
And if it is on consent and he feels like, this is a little further, we can just simply make those corrections on at the consent.
Can we
actually make language changes without rehearing it?
Well,
could we change? We didn't change anything.
Yeah.
Really?
We changed...
We struck.
Clarified your intent.
We clarified the intent.
That would be, you pull it off the agenda to clarify the intent.
To the extent, we removed duplication. To the extent that what we have here is what you actually decided yesterday, I don't think that requires a public hearing. However, the change that is we just did in B1, where we struck the language and is exempt from land use review. That is something that wasn't decided yesterday.
But what I'm not seeing here, we talked about the notification of groups larger than 150.
Thank you.
Very good. That's, Commissioner, if you turn to page 5.
Yeah.
And at the top of page 5, it says the sheriff's office will be notified. In that sentence, and we put the period at the very top of page 5, double underline, and in advance of any event, and we struck the rest of that because
events
on page,
right.
Three.
Two, you've now defined event as being 150 people or more. So basically, the sheriff's office gets notified of any event.
So I have a question, folks. So what about that last sentence then on page 5 in section 5.32.020? Licensed wineries are exempt from this section. I thought what was decided yesterday was that they weren't.
They're exempt from the requirement to have to get a special use permit for every event. That's why this language is here.
Oh.
Because that's pretty onerous.
Right.
Now, I had originally thought we needed to strike that sentence because we've now lowered the level of events. But they're going to cover their events in an event management plan. That was your direction. So this, we still need to leave the sentence in here. Otherwise, every time a winery wants to have an event, they got to get a permit in addition to notifying the sheriff.
Right.
Okay. Okay. We're good?
Perfect.
So our path forward is, again?
I think it needs to be re-noticed. Hate to do this,
that's
but
right.
I just don't see any way around it.
The process is thoroughly covered.
Yeah.
We want to get it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To as best we can.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I got an email from Carol Levinan. Did you get that?
That
she questioned the procedure.
We
may have been illegal.
And didn't
so
see that.
I asked her about that, and she said that we may not have properly done public notice because the CCCU was not notified. And I don't think we have to notify them. We just make public notice. Okay.
General legislative.
We'll work with
authority.
If they would like notice, there's certainly no harm in giving it to them, but they ought to tell us before
they sign up
complain about not getting it.
Yes, party of sign up with Rebecca. So, and we'll work with Axel. We'll notify the vendors.
Okay. Well, let's make sure that on this this next notice that they get it included. Besides, I know for sure that we told Eric Hidla. Who's that guy?
Eric Hidla.
What? Someone's not taking the club in. They need a good notification. Had we put that in the reflector, they would have got it.
If they read the small print.
2 weeks later.
No, okay. Not on consent, but rather it's got to be.
Okay.
We do have
I'm really sorry.
We want to make sure we are very
like that.
Thorough, transparent. Do it right.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Sorry for the hassle.
No hassle.
Thank you all.
It's clarification. Falling with
stuff that we're confusing.
Okay. Well, I've got a couple other things I'll stick around for. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, 1.2, I told Lori Volkman and Greg Kimsey and Kathy Garber, we call them. As you know, there's been significant changes in certain things about the cost of the advisory referendum and the staff reports to go with them. So
sounds good.
I'll call them.
Thank you.
Holly, did you do your thing?
Was that what I understood from Lori is that everything that we had in the way of verbiage was good. And the cost was so
significantly
much
higher. But we have a higher cost. Greg made a mistake in this quote.
Sorry, he already gave us a quote.
Sorry, but he's still going to bill you at the higher level.
I guess he's going to bill it. Go for it.
Well, watch. Ready? Presto change all. Here we go.
Bill, I guess what I'm getting at is that we're not going to remove any of them.
I never untie my tie.
The cost is going to be higher, right? That's all we need to know.
Good to see him.
The old bait and switch.
Now you get your outvoted 2-1 here.
I was in and out
like that. Surrounded by ties.
He was looking better with his off.
I don't mind that.
Hey, Greg, Bill.
You don't mind you're
I don't know what these are for.
That's a nice tie.
That
I like
that.
Beautiful.
Okay. It is. He'll be here in 10 minutes, and I'll call Lori.
What is a tie for anymore?
Just to say. I'm serious. I'm professional.
It's part of the.
Hi, you want to come at 5 after? Greg will come at that time.
The illusion of.
Do you know Kathy's extension, Kathy Garber?
Electronic services for the fourth largest Wall Street firm, Quick and Riley, back in the day. He never wore a tie.
The more successful you get, the less you have to wear one. Okay.
Sometimes it's just a function of
1.1 we can report it's kind of done, but
Mary, you want to give a progress report on
our
mailer
piece to promote? I actually could use one if you got one handy.
No, it's in the print shop. They haven't delivered yet, but we expect them to by tomorrow.
Great. And what's the plan to distribute them?
Holly Gilbert is going to take charge of getting that out to the fairgrounds and all the proper stations.
How many stations do we have?
Tomorrow's setup day. I'm still trying to pin it down, but John Morrison told me last week about 8. I'm awaiting word or email from the event coordinator.
I'd like to have a list of those if we can get them, because I plan to go to the fair on Friday morning. I'd like to be able to visit each of those stations.
Well, I'll try to get a list. That's what I'm waiting for, is a list.
Of the stations? Great.
Yeah.
So when you get it.
Where we have an exhibit.
You can copy me with the fair stations that are there.
Sure.
There's 8 of them or so. Yeah, and can I get a little stack of them too? Great, thank you. Oh, boy.
You just take them off one of those tables.
Well, I don't want to take the ones in and say, oh, they're all gone. It's like, who took them? My daughter took them again.
Give
you
some,
too.
That's
for you to say. Yeah, we should have some in the permit center as well.
Good
point. A little stand.
Good point.
A little stand, and then I think they're really cool.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Great. Good point. Mm-hmm. At least I'm here with Marty.
That'd be really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, 2.1, Commissioner Medora had a concern over a customer service issue with the community development while Marty's here. I assume that's why you're staying?
Yeah.
And then animal shelter?
Yeah, Paul, I told Paul I'd call him.
Okay.
I guess I can call you, but you're already here.
You can call.
Oh, cool.
Call. Marty, could you come out?
Hey, Marty.
Very nice.
You're so responsive.
Where is that? Aha, here it is. Okay, we want to make sure that... Is this a good time?
Well, that's up to the chairman, but...
Mr. Chairman?
We're talking about your concern with customer service.
Well, improvement for customer service. We have very good customer service. I love our customer service team, and we want to make sure that it extends to our phones as well when a customer calls in and they ask for help. Probably, let me invite Anna to because she was our secret shopper here. So, Anna, you have a copy of that?
Yeah.
Maybe you can explain, yes, from you're the pretend customer,
well,
how we can make it more better.
On a day when Marty and Jim and Holly were all out of the office, so I was just calling down there. I didn't call for as a secret shopper or any kind of agenda. I just called because I had a question. And so
I called you a secret shopper because that's in hindsight that's what it's fun.
I just see it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I got Marty's voicemail and he said that he was out of the office until July 30th and they'll leave a message. Call you when you get back. And so then I called Holly and she said she's out of the office. And today and Friday, she'll be back Monday, so please leave a net message if you need immediate assistance, dial 0. So I dialed 0, and I said, Director Snell and Jim Muir and Holly Sapir in community development are all out. I wonder if you could direct me to someone that I could speak to who might be covering for them. And the operator's response was, literally, I have no idea. I'm the county operator for all the departments.
Which is in purchasing.
Yeah. And I said, oh, I see. And then I asked the question again. I said, well, do you have a person that I might dial directly? I'm here in the county. And she repeated that, I have no idea. I'm just the county operator. I said, okay,
that's
thank
like
you.
Saying, I just work here.
So if I would, you know, we're stopped right there. Okay, because I was given the instruction to call the operator, and the operator didn't have any idea, and we were just stopped right there. So I just thought, as having come out of the corporate world with all of these things that we deal with and you all deal with the same, I just made a couple of suggestions of what might be nice if... on Marty's, this is Marty Snell, Director of Clark County Community Development. Thank you for your call. I'm sorry I missed you. I'm currently out of the office. Please leave a message. I'll call you when I return on July 30th. If you need immediate assistance, please call this person at this number who can direct you to the appropriate staff member or department. And then on the operator might be trained to say, I see, let me see if I can reach someone in the department for you. And yes, I'll transfer you to so-and-so at this number. And that way you're not just dead in the water. And Marty was gone for like a week. So they're leaving a message. It's captured right there unless you have someone answering or reviewing your messages. Just a simple customer service kind of thing. So they don't get in this loop and they hang up and go, oh, that was, what do I do now? I physically got up and walked down to the permits department and talked to Sonia, who was very, very helpful, directed me into Chuck Kreider's office, and we sat down and talked for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, so
yeah,
I thought I should bring it up.
The in-person experience is really great. Just our phone procedure, you know, we can do better.
I think so.
We just mark that up as constructive criticism.
Just an idea of how we can all improve.
Well, what the deal is
normally
after you do the operator, there's two different operators at play here. One is
there's a receptionist.
There's a receptionist
in my department,
but then
know where
the
I
default
am.
Operator goes to the main switchboard, which is in purchasing, which has nothing to do with his department. That's why she didn't know a thing. So what we should probably do is no more default down to that switchboard, but within your department. Don't have it go any further than your department, because if it's an inquiry about something with community development, the purchasing, the main switchboard is not going to know.
And we have the phone tree. When you call and you know and you don't know who to get a hold of, it's either building or land use or permit, and then dial zero for the receptionist, and that'll get to the community development receptionist. I don't know how you wind up with this county switchboard.
I do, because it's Holly's default is to the switchboard. We need to change that.
It should be to the receptionist.
There you go. That's what you got to fix.
We'll make
that's
sure
her point.
That's, yeah.
Because once she hit Holly's,
and then Holly would default
different
to
came
Susan
up,
or someone
there.
Else.
Yeah. So you need to keep it in your department. That's my guess.
Well, and my outbound voicemail, I'm always rushed to get it done because sometimes I forget it. I'm not gone usually a week. When I left,
you will not be gone a week anymore.
I will be gone a week or more. But I usually will say, if you need immediate assistance, please dial zero and you reach an attendant. I get fewer and fewer phone calls anymore. People who are contacting me almost always email, and my email says contact so and so at extension, because that person will direct you to the correct, the appropriate staff person. So I'll make sure that our zero line goes to the reception in our department rather than the county switchboard.
Have a little in-service with your folks, and that'll be fine. And because that's what happened. It defaulted out of his department into the main switchboard, and she doesn't know.
Yeah.
Except to give, if you ask her for a department, people call up the main number. Mm-hmm. Let me talk. I haven't talked about my tax bill. She knows to give it to the treasurer.
Mm-hmm.
But you had a specific issue for community development, which she wouldn't have known anything about.
Right.
Okay. She would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
She would have gone back to him or Holly, and would have gone right back.
Yeah.
So this fixes that?
Yeah, we'll make sure that the
change
zero
the
line doesn't go to the county switchboard for one.
Is that all we need to do?
Yes, sir.
I think so. I
have something we got in the permit office, too. The form that the applicant fills out for the fee waiver. It has a place in there to fill out the number of employees,
mm-hmm.
and then it has check boxes 0 to 5, 6 to 10, or something like that. And I'm thinking we should remove those and recall those applicants and ask them what was the real number, because the only reports I'm seeing is they check 0 to 5, and so it means nothing. In other words, we got fee waiver applicants that are not creating any jobs, and that's for sure not right. So it's not helpful. We really ought to ask them how many jobs. In the same form, per the resolution, we should also ask them what is the sales dollar or annual sales that this company that you expect that this company will generate, because that's what we actually built into the fee waiver resolution.
We have that, not in what we don't have that as a question. What is your anticipated gross receipts? We have that. The requirement in the resolution says after I think a year, I'd have to look at the form, but we say we can ask for records on your gross receipts. And they would provide that, or something to that effect.
Well, the idea behind this reporting is to allow us week by week to look at the success of this and give us some kind of metrics. And if we ask them that, they even if on this we can just simply, you can have whatever you have there that says, this is not necessarily, you don't have to be precise, there's no consequences for getting it wrong. Just give us your best guess on those two parameters, because it would help us to be able to know what the... how significant is this? The reporting that your office produces for that, it would be so helpful for us to be able to see at a glance what are those applicants, what's the name of the project, where is it, how many employees, what was the dollar about annual dollar sales in your report. That would, because then week by week we can keep our finger on the pulse and see how worthwhile is this program, what's the fruit of it.
So the form now asks in I think three or four check boxes, how many employees do you anticipate hiring?
zero to five, four, you know. Mm-hmm. So we'll just, that's open-ended.
Oh, there's a question above that that says fill in the blank, how many employees do you hire? So we just get rid of those check boxes.
Because just leave them open. I mean, get rid of them and just have them answer 4 or 40 or 400.
Yeah, the real number.
Okay, so that's open-ended. And then the second one is, you know,
what's your best guesstimate?
Your estimate of annual sales.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we can do that.
I hope
is that what you'd like?
Yeah. No, you get good information.
Yeah,
we can get good information.
That's really narrow down.
Sure. So, yeah, so inclined to share good. That. Yeah. Yeah. Best estimate of annual sales.
Yeah, it would also, let me ask you this too, Marty, so that we can understand whatever metrics are pretty well guessed at when somebody applies. Do we have a pretty good idea about the value of a project or the valuation of a project when they apply?
So when they apply and they submit their building permit application,
mm-hmm.
They put a valuation of the project down. The applicant does.
Oh, great.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Then let's include that.
However, for permit purposes, so you're building a 10,000 square foot mm-hmm. office building,
mm-hmm.
and the building code puts valuation of that 10,000 square feet of office space for purposes of calculating the permit application
okay.
or the permit value
okay.
and the plan review. So somebody might want to go, you know, gild it, right? And they're going to spend $10 million on that 10,000 square foot office space, or they're going to spend $2 million. Uh-huh. But the building valuation out of the building code is probably the most neutral value, because that's what then the assessor is going to probably be looking at in terms of what's the assessed value of that improvement on the land. Would you like that?
Well, I'm just, you're on your week by week report mm-hmm. that comes out.
Correct.
The number of jobs,
mm-hmm.
How much your annual sure. sales. In that
building valuation. We'll do that.
Yeah.
Building
so that we have some kind of metrical feedback that will
sure.
be on a week by week basis. We probably haven't collected those numbers for those ones that have already filled out. So that we get started right on this, let's go back and ask them what those answers are. So you can, because it'll get us from the very beginning the right info.
We can pull all that information from previous, because it'll be in the fee tables. The fees are based on the valuation, so we can
put the number of employees.
Valuation of them.
Let's ask the number of employees.
In other words,
if there, whatever missing information is there, let's go. Let's give them a call
okay.
and get that information. Number of employees, annual sales, and whatever you're the best.
And building valuation.
Yeah. Are there any other metrics that we can help us
before
understand?
Before you get far off the air, I want to share my experience. When I did mine, I filled out, I think the question was, what are you going to spend to build this?
That would be interesting.
First thing went through my mind is that
it will be interesting.
That could be what raised my taxes to. And then
you can do,
and also left me the ability to do my free labor. So there's a big fluctuation in what you're asking for. I put down building material costs.
Right, it's the valuation is based on.
Can you do that?
The material and labor to install that.
The cost of the permit was based upon
valuation.
The eventual property tax increase that we'll get from that would be most best represented by
building valuation.
Yeah, so that's when we'd be asking.
And we have that.
Project. Great. And so your reports that you give,
we can add
those
the building valuation
factors.
As a column,
mm-hmm.
and then employees, and then estimated annual sales.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you so much.
That'll take a little bit of work to get back to the ones from July or June 12th to now. So that'll take a little bit of work. I can't tell you when that would be.
Phone calls. Just to go back and grab that would be most helpful, because we'd love to be able to see. Hi. Thanks for everybody showing up.
So, Juan, we're here to help.
Hopefully you'll have staff that can do
hopefully
that.
We have good news.
Well, we can pull some new stuff on
okay.
valuation.
Yeah,
the other,
I just
the other
know
couple.
Yeah. Take staff time to do that.
And then I'll be back up with
okay.
Shoulder.
Lori.
Are you all
all ready for me?
Yep.
Great.
What you got?
Go. Okay. Marching orders from yesterday included finding out what the ballot can actually look like, is actually going to look like, and the answer to the question of where the language goes in the voter's pamphlet. So here I got a copy of first the sample ballot Kathy and I talked about, and then what I did was created a local measures sample ballot for you to see how the language would go on the on the ballot page.
These are other samples, just so templates.
The one that says state measures is one that was actually used. Okay. The one that says local measures is one I created today to show you an
Steve.
Example. Excuse me?
This will be for Steve.
Okay, great. I have a set for him also. I just used 5 and 6 because there were statements that were possibly a little more clear on, I didn't know the direction you would end up going on the format, as we discussed yesterday. So I used 5 and 6 as examples. You can do an adopted, rejected style or a yes, no style. I've just put both out there for your consideration.
I like yes, no.
Well, you look at the question, that shall have policy should be...
Yeah.
This verbiage here, advisory vote number 5, I thought we started, this references the resolution, but I thought the question on that was similar to what was on advisory vote number 6, started with should.
This is not what has been proposed. This is just an example of two different styles of language that could be used. I just pasted these in to give you some examples that match the other advisory vote measures to show you some different styles of how to actually do the verbiage on that. More important, I think, to the question you were asking is about how the explanatory statement and the actual text of the resolution looks and can be utilized. And I talked with Kathy about this, and she guided me to show you examples of the actual ballot. This is out of the last voter's pamphlet. So you'll see at the top the actual language of the vote. Statement 4 on the second page is the explanatory statement. That's a statement I was referencing yesterday. Mm-hmm. Statement against. Mm-hmm. And then a few pages later is the complete text of all the measures.
Great.
And Kathy and I talked, and we think resolution fits squarely within measures. So
Perfect.
The actual text would, in fact, be, you wouldn't have to link to it or reference it. It would, in fact, be in the voter's pamphlet.
Terrific.
So that was a good answer to a confusing question. I think that brings to me an issue that when we're having these discussions about elections issues, Kathy and Greg are really the experts on the details of how some of that goes, and I recommend they be present or available for those conversations.
Good idea.
Because then you're just asking me the questions, and then I'm just going back and asking them and reporting to you, so we may as well have the staff present.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
the who?
The elected
official. I was referencing Kathy, but I don't know what your availability is, Greg. I haven't talked with Greg about that at
elected
all.
Elected official and the staff.
There you go.
Thank you.
And or the elected official.
You're the second person you got in trouble for that.
I know. I was there the last time.
The important person, that the people, the citizens have elected, have chosen.
That's right. okay. So that takes care of that issue.
Great. I do have a kind of a question, and it is the template examples that you gave here. The question is, if we work with you ahead of time of that meeting in order to propose a particular text, will that be fine? Because I can imagine the alternate would be that we would propose a text, and then we would hand it to the PA's office, and then we would find out what actually got put on. would like to be able to actually partner with you to put something on that is that we know works, that we're already agreed upon.
Right. So normally, it's not the county proposing or passing a resolution.
That's okay. We don't know normal.
I know. And so normally, I wouldn't see it until after we receive the resolution.
You have an inside scoop.
And Kathy sends me the info. But since we're doing it this way, there's no reason we can't work on it ahead of time and just shortcut that process.
Well, I think it is common practice for jurisdictions to include that language in the resolutions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and we'll clear it with you to make sure that we're not proposing something that won't pass muster.
No, almost all resolutions have the exact language of the ballot title in it.
Great, thank you.
So the answer to your question, that was a long answer to your question, but yes is the answer.
I like that short one.
Okay. Great. To that end, I went ahead and prepared some proposed explanatory statements based on our conversation yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And I have those available for your review. Mm-hmm. I realize this is the first time you're seeing them, so I'm not asking for your buy-off on them. But
same question. Can we work with you on that, too?
Absolutely.
Oh, you got, is that a one-word answer?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Better than yes.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's more emphatic.
Mm-hmm. Great. Wonderful.
Okay. And then housekeeping measure is merely you asked me to ensure that the notice got out. There's 24-hour notice requirements. I did ensure that Rebecca worked with the Columbian to get notice in for this Friday. So here's the copy of that.
Okay. And the notice gives us the option to adopt it, but still the freedom not to.
Yes. It just says you're going to discuss it at the meeting. And then Mary has worked up a press release.
Well, with
Everybody's working here.
With Lori's assistance. But consistent with that sample ballot you just showed me, and also what I think we should say should the commissioners, not the board, because our board doesn't actually have jurisdiction, but individual commissioners have a responsibility to sit on these other groups. So here, I'll give you I'll give you
the revised version.
Four of these to discuss here.
Great.
Make sure that you are comfortable with it too, because I did clean up.
Sure. So we would actually like to get buy-off on this press release today from you at this
point. Let me ask you, because I don't want to forget it, what you just raised is a very important question, and that with all this horsepower in the room we have here, including the elected official here, I want to make sure, I think we all want to make sure that we don't end up with a discovering that we don't have the legal jurisdiction to do this. Have we checked with everybody we need to check with in order to do what is proposed here? If we adopt things as they were, was it yesterday?
Yes.
Is there something that we could find out about that somebody from the PA's office said, you know, how about that? We just discovered we don't have jurisdiction, we can't do this. Is there some risk, any risk at all?
Well, you have the memo from Bronson Potter advising you of the requirements for the advisory vote, and the text of each of those have been somewhat of a moving target over the last few weeks. So once we really get that nailed down, I can do a completely thorough legal review. But as long as each of those are focusing on the commissioner's ability to vote on transportation boards, which is what the authority concerns, and are worded to that end, I feel that it properly addresses the authority issue.
Can you make sure you check with who, you know, one of his, Chris Cook or Chris Horn or whatever, just make sure all the horsepower in that would be brought to bear on this is checked with, and we have a written statement to each of the commissioners that say we're good as proposed. We may find, well, of course, we can fine tune this a little bit since I'm because I fine tune minor things as they were proposed. Yep, there's no roadblocks, there's no gotchas, there's nothing that will pull it off at the last minute around. Now we're out of time. We want to make sure that
you want an insurance policy.
She can't make a guarantee like that. There, she can give you a legal opinion, but you can't. She can't give you a guarantee. Anybody can sue the county for anything.
No, I'm not talking about being sued.
That's the way it'll come.
Well, what I want to make sure is that the foresight that something could come, that the counsel from our PA's office foresees whatever you guys can potentially foresee, and instruct us if we need to do things a little bit different to protect us from being vulnerable because we did it in a way that was extra vulnerability.
Okay.
So help us to understand that's what is prudence. If you ask my girls what prudence is, they go like this. Prudence is looking ahead, seeing danger, and steering around it. So ask for prudence.
Okay, I can do that with some time. So do we need to set a deadline by which there's no more changes?
Well, we need to, well, the deadline for all of us to adopt this is...
I have been changes. Mine's ready.
Yeah. I know his is good because I drafted it. He hasn't changed it.
There you go.
There's much to be said about that.
Yeah, I'm sure that's also true. But
we,
no, that
we
is
just want to make sure that we have as much bulletproofness as we can before the drop dead date happens, and that we can deliver
to your team
what they need without us running into trouble.
Craig, is there any way possible that if we do this Monday, that something could be stopped from putting it on the ballot Tuesday? I know of nothing. And if it was challenged, it'd be challenged sometime after August 6th, while we've already met that deadline with the plans of putting it on the ballot. And well, someone could challenge it in those 3 to 4 months before November.
Never going to say never. If we receive a properly authorized resolution from a jurisdiction, from the legislative body of that jurisdiction, we will then submit that to our prosecuting attorney and say, "This look good?" And they say, "Looks good." We'll move forward and put it on the ballot. We'll actually create and print those ballots in the... Well, it'll be printed by, what, 1st September?
Yeah, probably.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. And they'll be starting to get mailed out by the end of September.
45 days before
end of September.
Election day.
So... As people really said, anybody can sue you anytime. And you know, if I got an order from a superior court judge that says, on August 10th, says, cease and desist doing this, we'd cease and desist doing that. But short of that,
And that'd be along the lines of an injunction. If that had happened, there's liability to the person that put that on.
There you go.
So I don't think it's going to happen.
There's a 20-day deadline from the day of the vote to challenge ballot measures or advisory vote, the text of either the explanatory statement or the text saying it's either not neutrally worded or doesn't provide enough information. There is a 20-day statute of limitations, if you will, to challenge that.
Okay.
It's a pretty short timeline.
This is much different than the anti-late repetition that Larry Mullen and so heard yesterday.
Yeah. The timing and the process for us to be able to actually assign those individuals who's produced the statements for and statements against. When do we do that, and do we get that word to you, right?
Yeah, that happens fast. There's like a 7-day or...
And I gave you the dates. I didn't bring them with me, but...
And they're in your resolutions, actually.
Sure. So do we need good notice for that, so that we invite people publicly to apply?
You, as commissioners, take action, but you will have to decide by the 8th who's going to be on the committee.
By the 8th?
By the 8th of August.
And, whoa.
Yeah.
In other words, next week is the 5th and then the 6th, and you're going to have those chosen in, by the 8th, and that's a public process, so it has to be really by the 6th.
No, I don't think it's that public.
You pick them.
Yeah. And then the reason it's so short, David, is that if you guys don't do it, then I am responsible for trying to do it.
Okay.
So...
So when you say you,
me,
Bill said you to me.
You do. You're for your resolutions. You need to pick your committee.
Oh, in other words, we're each champion different resolutions.
I'm not sure. I'm going to ask Bill. Is that right? You wouldn't have to have a majority of the commissioners approve the three members of the...
Well, I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah,
because each one of them has their own little case they're doing here. Mm-hmm.
A little pet dribble, each one of us.
Does that have to occur in a public meeting to appoint one of those people to that committee? I don't know. That's
a legal question.
Yes,
well, this is legal.
I'm look at this. I think I might have to talk to you.
We have an advisory commission meeting.
I haven't seen that in the past.
Yeah.
Because that would be actually, because of the timing, if that actually has to be made in a public meeting, on the 6th, and we haven't given anybody notice, and they don't even see it necessarily until, like, maybe the 5th?
I know it doesn't have to be public in the sense of a full-blown public hearing with notice, but it may have to occur in board time or with board action in order to take place. But let me look up the statute.
So, Greg, I go back and I look at the things that were on the ballot in the past and the actions that were put together when they selected people to write the pros and cons. It was never done in a public setting.
You know, it's not something I'm really involved in, Tom. I've been involved in when jurisdictions have not been able to fill those committees, then I've been involved in trying to get people.
Was this example? Did this example give us any guidance?
So I've also seen on the ballot that there was no opposition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Public transportation benefit.
If we don't find anybody,
whose idea was that?
Often, for school levies.
That was C-Trans.
Or fire district levies.
Okay, well then.
I have been unable to find anybody.
Moeller,
so we do
Pollard,
print that in
Kraft.
There. So
yeah.
No.
That's what I recall.
And then there was a net, the statement for
we are responsible
and
for getting
the statement written by Ben and Medora and Turley.
The pros.
So there were four.
And the cons.
Yep. Yep.
So the question is, do we have
to pick those three?
The question is whether that's subject to the Open Public Meetings Act.
I think
Jeff, I don't know the answer.
Jeff Hamm, I think, had a... he asked me. Actually, I kind of volunteered. And
Jeff?
So, yeah. Well...
and who picked,
well, the
who
question
picked
is,
Benton and Turley?
I don't know. The question is, how much freedom do we have as authors of these resolutions to select the fors and the against?
Lori?
You have the ability to choose who you think is best at your discretion. The question is whether that is the board or individual commissioners. I don't know the answer. I'll have to look that up. And the second question is whether it's subject to the Open Public Meetings Act. Those are both legal questions I'll have to go look for.
Okay. So let us know.
So would it be better to say that we have the responsibility choosing three people for a pro and three people for a con.
As a
if I don't do it, then it says in there was no support for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be or not to be.
Okay. And that has to be submitted before August 8th?
On or before.
If we want them.
Well, that's
what Mr. Kimsey
did. So we better go to bat here up early.
I'd not do it.
You have board time.
Well, and if it doesn't happen, when this has happened in the past, jurisdictions have been unable to fill those committees. I mean, the first thing I call the jurisdiction and say, really? Don't you have any ideas, any suggestions I can call? I'll turn
so
to the
if
jurisdiction
we,
first.
So if we fail to assign somebody, then it falls to you.
And I would certainly consider your advice on the recommendations.
Well, next question.
Before we go on, you would have board time on August 7th. So worst case scenario, even if it was subject to the Open Public Meetings Act, and even if you did have to vote corporately as a board, you would have the opportunity to do so on August 7th,
so
after the vote passes and before the deadline.
Okay, so that's an opportunity. And if it doesn't, we don't get 3-4 and 3 against by then I would assume that we will, that in board time, if I can kind of, we can kind of predetermine that now.
I'm going to have a real tough time finding somebody who opposes my idea.
I was thinking that same thing.
Okay.
So we can, if we don't make the decision corporately at that point and decide that, we can just agree that we'll each pick our, we're championing each one of these.
We are pretty much deciding that right now.
Okay. So
we'll go find six people.
Okay, so we have the freedom to choose.
I could probably do your,
choose fairly.
I could probably do the opposition on yours.
that is kind of funny that we're all champion number ones. It's like we're playing chess here.
Which is why I believe it's a corporate decision versus an individual.
Well, I was thinking the exact opposite, because I'm thinking that's why it would be.
Why didn't you put him on the board agenda?
So we have the freedom, and you let us know to the degree of that freedom, whether it be individual or corporately.
How free are they?
Okay. How about if I find that out and give Bill my legal opinion on that?
That sounds good.
Does that sound good?
That's my favorite.
While we're on talking about deadlines, do you recall, top of your head, what the deadlines are for freeholder filings?
August 9th.
5 to 9.
5 to 9.
Next week.
August 5 to August 9.
Yeah.
Which brings us to price.
Okay.
Before we get there, the other deadline
coming
up with the statements is August 15th, so it is a very tight timeline from creation of the committee to the statement.
Last legal question here. Do we as commissioners have the freedom to be able to include ourselves on the statements for our own resolutions?
Yes.
Oh, C-Tran did.
We've got
did
one.
Yeah. You were on the C-Tran, no.
Okay.
You're on the C-Tran again, so you're a C-Tran member.
But I didn't create the resolution.
The C-Tran board did.
Yeah, but I wasn't.
C-Tran board did.
The C-Tran board
put up the.
Oh, Medora. They did include themselves.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you had Moeller. Who's Tim Kraft? I don't know who that is.
I don't remember.
Well, Pollard's
so
not
the
on
answer is yes. You can commit, you can.
Okay. The pros were not.
Great. Thank you. We're all.
I know. Lawyers are used to saying yes all the time. It makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
A yes person.
And Bill, you said the what cost?
I think you need to know there's been a change in the cost estimates to do this. Everybody was going, oh, it's only $5,000 to $7,000 to do this.
Do they have anything to do with the auditor's budget?
Probably. The auditor's
here to
explain that.
So about 3 weeks ago, Commissioner Medora contacted me and asked me for an estimate of the cost of adding one advisory vote, two advisory votes, and three. And in my zeal to be helpful...
Yeah, lots of that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And recognizing that Kathy was in Florida for a training session and would not have access to county... the database, the spreadsheet that we generally use, that we do use to provide these estimates, I sat down with kind of our clerical person in the office and said, well, let's just look at the 2011 election. Odd number of your elections are pretty similar. It's only like non-target offices, and there are typically no county offices on the general election ballot. And so we looked at the 2011 election and said, well, let's see how much it increased the cost if we add one county measure on there, and it increased about $5,000. So I said, well, okay, give myself a little fudge factor, I'll say $5,000 to $7,000. Which violates one of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten, which is if you don't absolutely know the answer to the question, and Lori demonstrated that very well here today, if you don't know the answer to the question, don't answer it.
Well, actually,
who's laughing down there?
Actually, I'm very thankful for somebody who will take the risk of stepping out there and say, this is my best guess.
Well,
and disclaim it that way.
Well, and thanks
for that.
Because
that person gets things done.
And it was, yeah, and thank you. Because I was going to start my thing off by saying, it was just an estimate. Just an estimate.
Yeah. It was just an estimate.
Turned out to be not a very good one, but it was just an estimate.
That's all right.
We won't go through all the gruesome calculations, although the Commissioner Medora, you have in the past seen that formula.
Gruesome.
Yeah. Where we sit today, and you know, we have more information today about what's going to be in the ballot than we did 3 weeks ago. So we did think, I think Battleground and Washougal are going to have two issues. Now they only have one issue. At any rate,
Battleground will not be on at all.
Oh, Battleground will not be on.
The city of Washougal
will be
we
on.
Thought Clark County Fire and Rescue would be. They
That's
won't
it.
Be.
Oh, really?
So, you know, all those things change the algorithm, mm-hmm. or the output of the algorithm. So today, with our best information, our current estimate in great big bold numbers estimate of adding one additional let's say the cost of electing freeholders and one additional issue, one additional advisory vote is how much, Kathy?
I have it.
$139,000.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of electing freeholders and two advisory votes is
$145,000.
The cost of electing freeholders and three advisory votes is
$152,000.
Well, that's pretty. That's about pretty much the same.
Yeah. So then,
four is $158,000. Five is $164,000, and six is $169,500.
So that makes the first one $57,000, and then the next one $6,500, which is not far from your estimate. Great. $6,500 for the third, $6,000 for the fourth, $6,000 for the fifth, and $5,500 for the sixth. So you're right in your parameter.
Oh,
you
are. Dead on.
Yeah, that's well spun. So then there's one additional question that didn't get asked. Hasn't been asked, and that is, well, we have had a lot of discussion today about the voter pamphlet. Well, voter pamphlet has cost as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
so this is the ballot cost.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
The voter pamphlet is a little more complicated to answer because, frankly, we don't really know exactly how that cost is arrived at.
Okay.
We do it in cooperation with the Secretary of State's office. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that we reduce our voter pamphlet cost by about 2/3 by combining it with the Secretary of State's office.
Smart.
Yeah, it's lots of good reasons to do that, but it saves a huge amount of money. But sort of the bottom line is, if there were no freeholders, if there were no advisory votes, it would cost us about $40,000 for this year's pamphlet. And it would get spread out among all the jurisdictions, kind of the same way we spread out election costs. If we're adding, I forget how many freeholder candidates you assume there would be.
I figured somewhere between 5 and 8 per position.
Okay, so 75 to 120 candidates, plus these 6 advisory votes, it's somewhere around another $40,000.
Okay, so it's not bad.
Wow. Well, we're looking at
that. Well, spend money, it couldn't spend it any better to hear the voice of the people.
Did you say if you had it? Oh, I just said
if we could hear it.
Oh no,
I see. Thank you.
No, this will come right around back at you, Tom. Because this is a good opportunity. Thank you for that opportunity, Tom, to talk about the elections cost model. So our goal is to conduct elections and build up a fund balance so that when we conduct the presidential election every 4 years, which is that's the big game in elections. When we conduct the presidential election, we get all through that, we end up with about $100,000 to $200,000 in fund balance. So we have a transfer currently in budget from general fund to elections. It happens every year. And we work pretty diligently trying to make sure that transfer is not too big, not too small, that we end up with that $100,000 to $200,000 fund balance after presidential election. Most of the presidential election costs gets borne by the county. When there are unexpected costs like advisory votes and freeholders, CRESA votes, that messes up our assumptions.
Kind of wipes it out, doesn't it?
Yeah. So you will see a supplemental budget request to get us back to that kind of $100,000 to $200,000 ending fund balance.
No problem.
We could probably work on getting that down a little bit lower since Commissioner Stewart's not here.
Get that on the paper.
Thank him for his savings.
Every little bit helps.
Thank you for your contribution
to our fund balance.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Got it.
Thank you. Thank you.
We appreciate it.
We just need finally to address Mary's proposed press release also and get authority on that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't focus on that.
Well, we've kind of moved on, and I want to make sure that gets covered.
I like it. Simple. I think that we'll have a good turnout. All these issues. There's got to be something near and dear to everybody's heart.
I would suggest one change because people might say local. What is that? We really want to imply. We want to clearly say this is countywide. Each of these votes are countywide rather than local because local might mean.
We'll change that word to county.
Oh, good.
That's
a good catch.
Your goal.
Okay.
Number one, number two.
Oops. That's good. You're the one to say whether or not that's. That sounds good. We should say an existing I-5 because we have two interstates.
Good point.
And that last one.
Yes.
That's what it
is referenced as the interstate bridge.
New bridge west of Interstate 5.
Well, some people may think
she means on the last
two
one.
Because the two is an I also.
Oh. We'll just put a 5 after Interstate 5.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Cool.
Okay.
I heard a comment last night. Someone said, everybody needs an editor. Even Mary needs an editor.
Well, I will say Mary and I work together on this. And the thing I really like about this is making really clear that this is about adopting policies. And also the final statement she added that Commissioner Stewart mentioned, which is we don't want to get into the issues as much as what we're doing is putting it on the advisory vote. That's the board action. So I think that's a great addition to the press release. Mm-hmm.
So this is a press release that goes to our staff here?
No.
To the all newspapers.
To news media, neighborhood associations, other people who have signed up to get
the releases. Then I would include in them the reference to the resolutions so that and actually include their copy of the resolutions because
not in the press release.
No, I'm sorry.
Even reference to the webpage.
Let me not say no, but let me put it a different way.
Thank you.
We remain at your service.
You
well,
always
all we're doing,
thank you.
All we're doing here is giving people a heads up that there's going to be a hearing, and then typically that material would go on the website.
So the intent is to...
This is just to say, hey, there's
bring people in.
Special hearing, yeah.
Okay, that's
but,
fine.
But subjects. When is the stuff going to be on the website for the...
Probably
by
after we vote.
Will be discussed.
Yeah, and we need to get this out tomorrow. So, but people know if they want paper or documentation mm-hmm. that it is typically available on our website.
That's a normal media.
Yeah,
they're looking for just the guts in the press release.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay.
And Lori Wolfman, do you concur that the question should commissioners as opposed to should the board? Because when they go forward to use these advice from the voters, they'll be doing it as individual commissioners, not as a board, right?
They're going to adopt the policy as a board.
A lot of people don't know what the board is.
So commissioners is the right word.
Commissioners is probably the right word for public consumption.
Okay, and does anybody know if Commissioner Stewart intends to be in tomorrow?
No.
Actually,
he didn't check with me. So I'll talk to him about that.
It looks like a little typo here.
Where's that?
In your first big paragraph from the top, mm-hmm. proposed ballot measures would ask voter policies involving interstate routes on the Columbia River, public transit. We would probably say and public transit.
Yes, we've already caught that, but thank you for making sure we did.
Okay.
Stewart said to call him if you had any call him on his cell phone.
Okay.
You
all
call
right.
and thank him for his contribution to keep the cost down.
Otherwise, okay for tomorrow morning?
Let me just finish reading here.
Looks good to me. They'll get the idea.
And questions.
Is Paul coming up
this for is the... Good.
If you want me to? Are you ready?
Well, yeah, he's got something to share with us.
He does.
So I will get the corrected version. Would you get the final copy of it?
Hi, Paul. You and Marty want to come up? Thanks. Staff reports, any comments or any discussion on those?
Oh, just to be sure, is the fireworks thing going on?
Yeah.
We have 6 questions going.
That's
right.
Steve's project, so
yeah.
I don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
I do have one question here in the last paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
We say, basically, we're not intending I think what we're trying to communicate in this is that this is not the time to argue for or against the resolution.
Right.
But we want to make sure also that we welcome people's feedback on what those resolutions are, because we can still amend those resolutions.
Okay.
So if I bring in a bunch of people,
that's clear enough.
That's within the scope of the hearing.
I mean, we just want to make sure we don't say whatever you do, don't talk about the resolution and what the content is.
We're good. I think that people understand that they can speak to how the resolution or ballot measure should be crafted, but they're not supposed to speak to which crossing is the best.
Okay. Yeah. This is not the time to vote.
Right.
Okay.
I was just going to ask you the question, if a bunch of people come in and didn't like your idea, would you remove it?
What's my track record? Nah.
I just want to know how much you want to hear from the people.
I've often said, this hearing room is not an election.
Remember, I said, not everybody's going to agree with 15 points. I'm agreeing with 13 or 14. Because I don't agree with all 15, I might vote no on your idea.
I think that's easily remedied by changing language to say which may include or should include instead of making a requirement.
Don't tell him.
Well, it's in your suit, Tom. That was going to be my recommendation.
I will consider that.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, the resolution I'm proposing, it's not a guess. It's not a wish. It's not a intention. I'm working with an architect. It's real. This is a real proposal with the parameters that actually work. I know that they're solid.
You talk to someone in Oregon. They may not like the idea.
I'm open to listen to anyone.
It's just an advisory vote from the people in Clark County. What they would like for us to work on.
Well, you know, I see that people discount the whole idea of an advisory vote, like they can't force us to do anything. And yeah, it's true, they can't force us to do anything. But the idea behind an advisory vote is that we, in order to be faithful representatives of the citizens, should always welcome their feedback, and hopefully our own integrity would move us to listen to and follow that, unless it violates our own principles.
You are now in the field of politics.
Well,
I left the table.
I play by different rules. Thank you. Is there anything else left here?
A couple of issues. The first is on the staff report. So Axel has combined all of the transportation issues into one staff report.
Oh, he has something here? Do I have a copy of that?
No.
Do we have a copy?
It went out on email this morning.
There's a copy for you?
It's actually two different staff reports.
Two separate reports.
Sorry, I only have the one set with me. But it basically combines all the transportation into one staff report. And
you okay? Okay.
Here's what I think perhaps it should be separated.
Here's what I suggest. Just like we have the freedom, each one of us to work, to champion our own resolution, to work with staff, including you, Lori, that if Axel has a staff report that's tailored for at least each commissioner, then we can work with that with Axel without having to worry about changing it for the other commissioners. In other words,
I can't speak for Axel. Yeah. I'm bringing this up just as a format issue. I know he's not here until Monday, so I actually don't. We know how to get a hold of him.
Okay.
But this is the staff report that I got a copy of this morning.
I have a recommendation
from
for
Axel
us to make motion to pass them all at one time.
Well, normally a staff would just come with their staff report. It's not approved or it's just the information about what's being proposed. Now, in this situation, the Board of Commissioners is the staff, and Axel is, you know, they are the proponents, for example, of individual commissioners are. So your staff member is Axel.
Yes.
So
okay.
You may work with him. He forwarded those to me just because he's out this week. So I would propose check your emails and get back to him. But I am recommending that we separate the transportation issues into individual staff reports.
I agree.
So I will forward Axel an email then saying I recommend we separate these, and then I will encourage him to meet with each of the proponents of them to work out the details. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay, and then I'm not 100% clear before I leave on what my action item is for the opinion on letting you all know about what's potentially vulnerable. We didn't really set a deadline or talk about how to go about doing that. I don't want to give an opinion on language that's going to change, in other words.
Yeah.
Before the end of the special meeting on Monday, I think.
He says in here the five issues to be submitted to. We assume that all five will be on, but we want to make sure just in case that not all five. We would say the issues to be submitted to them. We don't have to say
that's
the number.
That's what you're meeting on Monday for.
Before. Okay.
I don't suspect them to change.
I don't either, but just want to make sure that we don't have to change the staff report.
Special meeting's Monday, right?
We can amend it.
That would be one suggestion.
I think you would need to work with Axel on email on your individual. Yeah. I will start the email by just making sure everyone has copies and then encourage you to work with them individually.
Yeah, I'll work with them on. Yeah,
we need to have those by Monday morning.
Yeah. Because.
On the opinion, how about if I lay out the parameters for the advisory vote, and then I can give a final opinion after any amendments are adopted on Monday at the special meeting before we have to file on Tuesday?
Opinion in reference to?
The whole bulletproof issue.
Well, we really ought to know the answers to those as best we can before that, because if we have the meeting and we decide to do this and that, and then we find out afterwards, if you'd only had changed this, then it would be...
Yeah, but you got to have okay. You can't give her a moving target, though. You remember, well, kind of like the board.
No,
well, we're not.
I understand what you're saying.
Assuming you have a pretty good target already, and if it as it is it bulletproof, or can you recommend changes to make it more bulletproof?
I can do that with individual commissioners.
Okay.
Would that be able to be done by just a colleague looking at and agreeing? That would be.
Well, I think I can work with individual commissioners on that issue, and I'll do that with each of you.
Actually, what becomes of the staff reports? Do they go in the voters' pamphlet?
Official record.
They
just go part
attached
of the minutes?
Meeting, yes.
Okay. And normally you have one staff report per resolution?
Yes. So I would ask you to simplify and not drag it out. This is a summary of pretty much what we're doing that we're going to approve.
It's a summary, but I see a few fine tunes I'd like to be able to do on here. For instance, he's got a comma between East County and Toll Free that make people think might be a different project.
It doesn't change the meaning.
Well, he might think it's an East County bridge, and then there's a Toll Free bridge, and then there's a bigger, better bridge, and so there's some fine tuning.
I'm kind of inclined to accept this in its simplicity. I anticipate no major changes rather than do six separate ones.
I'm flexible. I think we can still end up with a little bit more clarity, especially when it comes to each of us tailoring the wording that has to do with our particular resolution.
We've got one sentence in there.
Well,
maybe a half one. It could be Melky's and Medora, and therefore you only get half that sentence. Okay. I'm done splitting hairs with you.
I think we're good in with
all right.
With small fine tunability.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Great.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Lori, very much.
You have a new animal shelter for us.
Not without a whole mountain of issues. Paul can kind of get some more.
Okay, so when we met last, we were I walked away with the task of looking into feral cats. And I'll just pass it down.
We'll take one.
Actually, it was, sorry, I flip it over. I'm kind of a big double-sided guy. You can note there on the trailing 12 months that we had kind of, it's just math if you just go left to right. the far right-hand column under county only, you can see that through the months we had 23 on down to 5 feral cats in a particular month, total of 156 for the trailing 12 months, 24 on average per month. At the rates there in that final rate column, you can see that we spent just under 20 grand on feral cats. So it just gives you perspective. So the program that the Humane Society is enthusiastic about, but more than likely not going to be moving on until sometime next year, will, for the short term, which is probably the 3 to 5 year period, be no less expensive for us. The reason that you go into this program is the thought that over time the ferals will diminish, but your costs go up in the initial years because you have, it's more expensive to neuter, capture, neuter, and return than it is to have the cats come in and euthanize. It's just, it's more expensive.
I was talking with some people who, some other experts in the field, and they brought up some good points. For instance, you have a lot of insight because you're out there, you're handling these animals yourself, right?
Oh, I try not to. Yes, I have had experience.
You put on your welder's gloves and...
Yes, that's wise. Kitty. Yes.
Okay.
Catch bulls.
Because the idea of, I assume that you're not just out there looking for feral cats.
Absolutely.
Somebody calls you.
Correct.
And when they call you, they really don't want the animal picked up and then returned. Right?
There are people who want to adopt feral cat colonies.
Well,
but it's...
Well, I would think that...
The typical barn cat, yes. They're not interested in seeing the population grow, but they do like the cats about to help with the rodent issues. But yes, by and large, probably the easy 80-20 on this one, they are not interested in the cat coming back. They want the cat and the cat problem with that cat gone.
So if you get a call and they say, hey, we got this cat around here, take this thing out of here. It's probably diseased and we don't want it around here. That was another point that they brought up. They said that most feral cats are diseased. And one of the cruelest things you can do is to let that disease run its course and that cat has one horrible, slow death.
Right.
And it's the least humane thing to do unless you're trying to, because they don't get their shots, they end up with all these horrible things.
So did your people tell you anything further than about the evaluation of the ferals that come in and you would only return those that are deemed of a certain health standard?
I say, well, they're not my people. I'm trying to remember, recycled pets, I think they call them, in that cute, in Battleground. And there's also feral cats. It's not Feral Cats Unlimited. That would be funny. But there are some some organizations that do deal with them. And I'm curious to get your insight. And just one of those things is just simply to return the cats. If they don't want the cats returned,
so,
and you still have a trap, neuter, return program, where will you return them to?
North County.
Coyote territory?
Well, that's a bad log, but yes. So out in the Farger Lake, area, and I'm going to point the wrong part of the map, but it's out here somewhere. We're working with an elderly couple that live across the street from the Farger Lake store, and they never raised their hands, but the cats have reached a point where they're right across the street from the store, so there's lots of activity, lots of cars, but there's also lots of food available. But the feral cat community has gotten beyond their means, and now the cats are suffering. So we're working with a volunteer and my staff and the Humane Society on rectifying the problem. But again, you're taking in literally litters at a time, and they don't want them back. And in some cases, they're either diseased or starved beyond means to wean them back to health, that the most humane thing to do is to euthanize them.
Yeah.
So you are correct that there is a good portion of these that we're getting called out to, because we don't drive around looking for ferals. I don't have the capacity for that. There are people saying, get them off of my property,
mm-hmm.
and don't bring them back.
And so what do you do in that case?
Well, the program right now is euthanasia.
Okay. All right. How many of these, how often do you pick up litters of kittens?
Sorry?
Picking up litters of kittens.
How often or what season?
How often?
Yeah.
Because these are all cats, assuming they're all mature, but you must be picking up litters of kittens as well.
You'll note that beginning in about May and June on through about October is typically the kitten season. I can't speak, Commissioner, directly as to it's, you know, one a week or three a week. I don't know.
Okay.
Where are you going with this?
I guess I will probably just simply pick your brain because I have more questions than probably was appropriate than that would be appropriate for board time. I wanted to make sure that we are doing the most humane thing and being informed that way and being a good steward. And I guess that requires my interviewing you a little bit more to make sure that our decisions are only as good as the information is based on. So I just want to make sure I'm a good student.
Well, I believe that's why the Humane Society began a conversation with you about their looking into this Feral Freedom Program, because they too are trying to focus on the humane part of their title, mm-hmm. and so they have concerns about these numbers as well, mm-hmm. and they just want to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll interview with you one on one.
So with
no conclusion yet, just want to be a good student.
Sure, I would love to have either of you. And I don't know if you've done it lately. Maybe before you go, we can give you a little send off by going on a ride along.
I'd love to. I spent 5 hours yesterday on the railroad tracks doing the, what they call it, the high rail.
While I was in the office sleeping.
Sleeping?
What did you say? Slaving. Let's be clear. We have slaving.
Slaving.
It's unique work.
Carrying the load.
I would love to.
I get a couple phone calls a week from predominantly young people saying, hey, I'm interested in a career in animal control. What do I need to do? And how are you with people? Because as much as you love the pets, it's the people that are 80% of the day. 80% of the day. So I would very, very much encourage you to go out because it's enlightening.
I would be very happy. I'll arrange that. Thank you very much.
Well, and back to our central question, we have a deadline facing us in terms of Commissioner Mielke has asked for analysis of what it would take to build and operate an animal shelter of some nature on the fairgrounds. You have those numbers.
Did you have...
And we do have the Humane Society's letter that has asked once again, you each got from July 12th on, okay, what's up? Or what are we going to do? So
well, the problem I'm having is that short notice and we have a lot more information I think that we need to gather and to look at what our truly affordable options are, and I have a problem with being forced into a 2-year contract.
Well, what more information would you like us to do? Would you redirect us in terms of the information you got? What more information would you like?
Well, I'm going to probably look for you. You got building costs. Mm-hmm. We have housing costs. Do we have any facilities at the fairgrounds that we could use?
So I'm late to the party here.
Oh, okay.
And I put something together working with Mark McCauley and John Morrison and Paul and Bill on their financial issues, right? And there are assumptions built around the financial issues.
Yeah, the problem I'm having, we're forced with a financial issue. And we're weighing that financial issue because I see no end to the cost of dealing with stray animals. We're going to be, we're asking $170 for next year and $200 for the following year.
My volume doesn't stop. I had 2,250 phone calls just this month.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
That's
the cost is going
cat.
Up. Responsibility is going up, and at some point along the way, it's going to match our financial obligation that we're going to take it on ourselves.
So, but there are the financial issues mm-hmm. that we can discuss and play around with the assumptions. Mm-hmm. There are these logistical issues that I outlined in this memo working with folks, and especially the fairgrounds,
you know, and John Morrison, there are impacts to the fairgrounds property, there are impacts to the amphitheater because we have an agreement with the amphitheater, and then there are impacts to the surrounding neighborhood.
You'd have to change the CUP.
There are a number of what I would characterize as lose propositions. One of the things, just, you know, off the cuff, folks are going to a family-friendly fairground site or amphitheater, and they're going to drive by what will be perceived as a kill shelter.
You're assuming I'm putting this out in front.
Well, there aren't many.
Give me a break.
There aren't many places.
The land is on the main entrance, Commissioner.
There aren't many new places.
You better look back behind the fire station.
That's where I'm looking. That's the main entrance.
That's the main entrance. So there are a number of logistical with the fairgrounds, the amphitheater, and then the neighborhood. And then there are some policy issues. And again, to the front cover of this memo was the financial. You know, if we build a facility and we operate the facility, what are our costs per annum?
Yeah.
And there's also an assumption that Vancouver, the city of Vancouver, who pays a portion, they pay their fair share of it, that they would break away from the Humane Society and then come with us. If not, then our animal per animal cost goes considerably more.
If I can make
costs.
A suggestion, I hope to continue to gain insight in this and ride along with Paul and Paul's team and continue to learn more about this subject. And my guess is that the answer is going to be different than what we're considering now, like building a new shelter or something like that. And it's premature at this point to try to make a decision on it. There's more homework to be done.
I'm amazed that Kamath Washoe can afford to do their own, and we can't afford to. I'm amazed that the city of Spokane does their own.
Probably ought to go tour them, too.
And are very successful and have been doing it forever.
We can do it, Commissioner. It's just, here's the cost of doing it.
Well, that's if you want to put bells and whistles.
No,
on it. Yeah.
No, it's not bells and whistles, Commissioner. This is a basic shelter, half the size and a third the size of Humane Society.
Commercial building and... Okay.
There are certain requirements commissioned by the health department, state requirements, and that's what's in this figure.
Okay.
So if you want to give us more guidance on what figures you want, we'll be happy to do it. This is his best estimate in terms of what it's going to cost to build and operate a facility like this.
Good. I'm just saying, I'm just outperformed by Kamath Washoe.
They own the building. They've owned it for years. That's the big piece there. They own the land. They own the building.
They contract the West Columbia Gorge Humane Society to operate that shelter, though.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a great job in a very limited space with next to no staff.
And very few numbers, I imagine.
And I'm not trying to be a jerk here, Commissioner, but what's happening is if you decide not to go with the Humane Society and you say, go build a facility, we can't do that in a matter of months. It's going to take at least a year to do. So what are we going to do in the interim? We have an obligation by statute to pick up these animals. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, I'm just trying to give you the parameters of we're coming up, not Humane Society, forget them for a minute, we're coming up against a go, no go kind of thing.
Right.
So if you want us to say, go build a facility, here's the money, go do it,
well,
it's going to take some time to do it. If you're going to go rehab the facility and go do it, that's going to take some time as well.
There are other options that are not being considered here, and we don't know what they are yet. For instance, most businesses don't start by building a building. Most businesses start by locating a building and adapting.
Or having a contract with somebody who already does it.
Uh-huh. That's right. So there's lots of different options.
What are the options, Commissioner? Please, tell me what we can explore for you to give you decision-making.
Actually, I'm not going to ask staff to explore it. I'll do the best I can to do some homework and share what I learned. Go gain insight. Become a student.
We will keep this on the agenda for your guidance.
I'm having an issue of being forced into a 2-year contract. That's one. It's our ship, and we're being forced to do something. And either we start changing, I think, first of all, we need to change our policy as to how we handle whether or not we pick up cats. we're looking at a cost of a full employee just handling cats, or half a guy, or half of them. We're talking, when you talk feral cats, you're not talking, I look at the total cats is what I look at, not just the feral cats.
Well, if we've gone down that road before as well, and I'll remind you that if cats come off the table, then so does their revenue, which is about $80,000.
From who?
From licensing cats.
Oh.
You can't have one and not
the other. Well, no, what I'm saying is that if they're out there and they're cats that belong to anybody and you don't adopt them all out, then we didn't get that revenue anyway. So the pets that are taken care of, we still should collect the licensing fee for those.
Okay, so earlier in your statement you said something along the lines, and I want you to help me understand it, that we would no longer handle cats. Can you further define that, please?
Well, I guess we wouldn't pick up cats.
Okay, then you're not going to get any licensing revenue from them, because why would I license my cat if you're not going to provide a service that goes along with my buying that $10 license? So then there goes your $80,000.
For the operating side on
so
control.
So the total cats picked up was 2,644. Is that correct?
No. The total cap for the county was 1,123. Go over a couple rows, columns.
Okay.
Split between the city of Vancouver and the county.
Is this city and county or just county?
Look at the county only columns. It's highlighted at the top. And go to the one that says total cats, and then go to the bottom that says 1123.
So it's 1123.
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm showing more.
It does say county only. Total cats for county only, 1123.
And round figures of $200 a piece. That's more than 84,000, I think, isn't it?
Not by much, but it is. Earlier in our conversation, we talked about the definition of humane.
Yes.
Are you not concerned that maybe you're moving away from that by not handling cats any longer?
Well, no. I guess what I'm saying is that we were talking about what is humane. You know, what do you leave them out there to roam and die and starve? That's not humane. I don't believe it's the taxpayer's role to be responsible for other people's cats that have become street cats. At least let them go. I mean,
right.
You'd be astounded at the number of animals that are dropped off out in the rural area. And so, yeah, you talk about humane. I mean,
well, my mother hasn't had kids in school for the better part of 3 decades now, and yet she still pays property taxes that goes to pay for schools because she knows it's the right thing to do.
It's humane.
It's the humane thing to do for society. Okay. Maybe that's not a great analogy. Commissioner, you also said a 2-year contract. I think a 2-year contract is actually quite fair, and they have been very forward with us for the better part of probably 2 years now asking for this. So being pushed into a corner really is the result of our own doing, not theirs.
No, we have, because what happened, Humane Society exists from donations from people who really want to take care of all the animals. And when the economy went down, the burden seemed to fall more on us because they came to the county and they said, we're still getting the cats and dogs.
Correct.
And our expense is up here, and so therefore we need more money from you, and that's what they've done.
Well, their pricing, their costs never changed. It's just that their ability to subsidize us was reduced due to donations.
And goes back to whether or not we want them to stay in the Hilton or down to Motel 6.
We haven't helped ourselves as well, Commissioner, by having this be borne out in the press, because now what I'm hearing is that donations are further in jeopardy because now people understand that their donations to the Humane Society are subsidizing the county government, and they don't want that. So we're not doing ourselves any favors.
I got a question here. In your first three columns total, is that City of Vancouver and County?
Correct.
City and County. And your column that says Farrell under County. So the total counts is the total. What's AC stand for? Incoming AC? Animal Control. Okay.
Those are my people bringing it in versus citizens bringing it in. So these are all values given to me by the Humane Society. And the column number four, the feral cat percentage column, mm-hmm. Commissioner, mm-hmm. that is a county-wide value. They don't break it down by jurisdiction.
County four, column four. Which one?
This one here. Is it county-wide value?
This one here?
They don't.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, they don't break it down by jurisdiction, so I had to do some further mathematics to get there.
All right, so we got the total dollar over here. Is that feral cats and total cats?
That should be dollars for just ferals.
Oh, so the okay.
19,542.
Okay, so the 19,542 divided by 156 equals $225, which is the average of those. I got it. Okay, thank you. So, to be continued. Need more input.
I think that we're rocking a hard spot. I don't feel comfortable with being the only person forced into a 2-year contract. If that be the case, I guess that our administrator only has a 1-year contract, and usually he has 2-year contract.
I have a 2-year contract.
Then every year we renew 1 year.
Well, I'm not going to be around. So,
but just amazing. But okay.
What's the timeline for this?
I need a place to put the cats. I got 2,250 calls in a month. I need somewhere to put them, and I need to know soon.
I think for right now, we'll probably...
We have a contract through the end of the year, right? So we're good for a while.
But isn't there a notice requirement? Is there a notice requirement as to renewal?
They already gave it to us.
Okay. That was the notice?
That was the notice.
For renewal.
Before the end of the year, we need a new contract.
But that's the notice.
No. So that's what I said. I'm not comfortable with the 2-year contract, and I feel I'm being forced into it.
And he tried to negotiate.
Because all of a sudden
contract.
They didn't like the last 1-year contract. So 6 months later, to come back and ask for a 2-year contract. That's great.
Can you authorize him to do a 1-year contract?
I'd feel a lot more comfortable if we had a 1-year contract. But
okay, they came to us with a 2-year contract,
and we had one.
And we now they're coming with two, and the commissioners are saying, as to get us out of the hard spot, go see if they'll accept the 1 year again.
I can see us going to a two-year contract if there's no other option.
Well, the other option...
And we're not real happy with it, and we'll make changes along the way.
And Bill is asking, how may we assist in divining more options?
Well, Commissioner Medora answered that. He's going to go ride with you, and that will generate maybe some thoughts that he will have with regard to options.
But I want to know who I give the bill. If I give Bill the county for the strays that are dumped off at my place, it's only fair.
How about you call Animal Control?
Well, it sounded like what you were just asking is that to go back to the Humane Society and ask for... You asked for 2 years. We're pushing back and saying 1 year is what your request is. So
to keep us working on alternatives that we might come together on.
Mm-hmm. Keep things going until there's a problem.
We also only have another year left in this biennium, so there is some rationale
year.
For this.
Kind of like a year, month-to-month, rent, Marty. Year-to-year.
Kind of. And
right.
I think...
Thank you.
In the near future, I think we've got to review our policy as to what we're picking up. Is that right now we're just talking about the contract, but I think somewhere along the way in the near future, we're going to have to decide what we're going to do with the cats.
So, we'll continue to get more input and do our homework and become a good student and make sure we cover the bases.
And ask for a one-year contract. If they don't want to do that, we're forced into a two-year contract. But we'll make adjustments for ourselves.
Thank you.
Question?
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what's next on the agenda?
Okay, 2.3.
Next agenda.
2.3.
Fifth ordinance.
That's you, Mr. Medora.
Oh, yeah, Axel. Is he not here?
No, it's not about Axel. This is what you asked me to put on the agenda. This is about Chris Horn doing the necessary code changes to make PIFs one fund.
Great.
PIF.
Underway.
Wonderful. And so... he's on it, and we'll get it.
He's on it, and I will have him push to get it as soon as practicable.
Well, I don't need to push him, just have an idea about what would be comfortable for him to get her done.
Yes, sir.
Great. Okay,
Underpaid your park impact fee?
Well, the problem is right now is that the park impact fees can only go to buy new property.
Oh.
And what we'd like to be able to do is to change that so any new money collected can go to develop.
Operation?
Well, it would be to develop and design and develop those parcels we already own.
Not
flexibility.
Quite.
Well, we don't have money for
it. It's a little bit different than that.
Oh.
We now have two funds. PIFs flow into two funds, one for acquisition, one for development.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our county code. PIFs don't have to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
What you agreed for us to do is combine them into one fund so you can use them any way you want to, acquisition or development. And what we agreed to, if you remember, to get the building and the MPD going again, is once we do that, prospectively, we'll be able to borrow money from that fund to build parks, and then we'll pay it back from the MPD as it begins to grow again. That's what you've agreed to.
That's kind of a separate issue.
No, well, the first issue, though, is to make those one.
And so there's a fund balance in the capital, and there's a fund balance in the...
acquisition and development. Two separate
development.
Balances. Yes, sir.
Okay. And we can decide to go ahead and combine both of those accounts and don't worry about the history of them.
The history has to remain the same. The money can flow prospectively into the new single fund.
Okay, so...
That's the legal opinion, anyway. I've tried to talk Bronson out of it, but he got away too fast.
Okay. Okay, so that...
And the reason is because it's all done by... It's done by the developments that took place in those 10 districts, you see.
Yes, so it would be moving the district. It would just simply...
It would just be...
It would stay within the same district.
Right.
But legally, we can't redesignate that now it's going to design... Even if we... get permission from those.
Correct.
According,
that's what he said legally. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
So the sooner we do that, the sooner we can start getting funds
prospectively money
into the account where we can actually design and develop those parcels instead of keep buying more without being able to develop.
So the money we collect from the PIF for purchase
and development
but
based on your ordinance,
but nothing for
maintenance. MPD
design.
Is for maintenance. MPD is for maintenance.
You said design.
The idea was that we could, there's once we have parcels, to design and develop those into parks. That's what I had
and
in mind.
We can't design and develop now.
Yes, you can.
We're splitting the PIFs into accounts at the very beginning, and it would be better to not split them.
Okay.
So that you can use it for either or.
Yeah, I see that.
Because we have huge balances in acquisition and very little in the development side.
Yeah. I would like to even further that, and I don't know if that's legally possible for maintenance and operation.
No, you can't. Park impact fees are simply
so
for...
We could buy them and build them, but we can't maintain.
And that's
them.
Why we didn't buy park. That's why we didn't do it for years and years and years, because the commissioners didn't have maintenance money. So what did we do? We went and asked the people. So we now have the Metropolitan Park District, which is solely for maintenance costs.
Yeah.
I thought that was the PIF you were talking about.
We were. But the only... And PIFs cannot be used for maintenance. So what the board did, they said, go to the people and ask them. So we went and did, and what was established was the Metropolitan Park District, which is solely for maintenance. So we have funds over here for acquisition and
it's a
building.
A statewide property tax.
No, it's a local property tax.
For the 10 districts?
No, for countywide, for the Metropolitan Park District, which is basically the Vancouver urban growth boundary.
On my property tax... for parks.
Mm-hmm.
That's a regional park.
Metropolitan Park District, if you're within the Vancouver urban growth boundary, you should probably be paying a property tax for that, yes.
So it's Vancouver.
The urban growth boundary, the unincorporated area and the city.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to get at. Mm-hmm. That was a special
election
that they did.
Yes.
And there's no maintenance money in there.
There is now because they approved
it. Now. Okay,
they approved
that's what
it.
I'm trying to get to.
Right, they approved that.
So the other part is not the metropolitan area.
Correct. It's 10 separate districts.
You're talking outside the incorporated area.
Right.
Oh, okay. I have it backwards.
I have two questions. Is it state law that prevents PIFs from being used for O&M?
I'm not sure.
Can you find out? Mm-hmm. Because if it's county policy, then we could potentially change that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, good. All right. When it comes to the MPD funds, are they also divided into two different categories?
No.
So it's just MPD's operation maintenance.
Right.
They're most flexible.
Correct.
Okay, great. Okay. Great. That's
okay.
Okay.
And you said one can be borrowed and the other...
authorize us to do is, once we do that, once we get the ordinance changed, then we can borrow from the individual. And I went over an analysis with you that showed you that in the 10 districts, within the 10 districts, the... how many? 7 parks that need to be built all fall within a district that has a lot of money in an acquisition fund that we're going to borrow from and then pay back.
Is there interest or anything involved in that?
Well, we have to establish our own.
Market rate?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll come to you with that. That'll be after we make the decision on parks.
I'd like to know where the other 10 districts are.
Sure. We'll show you. Got a map.
Because part of it is incorporated and part of it is in the urban growth boundary.
Yes, eight are in the unincorporated area, 2 are with Vancouver.
I have a paper ready to go on to an agenda.
Yeah, if we're done with that, you want to go ahead with your stuff?
Okay. The website, our county website customers come to apply for permits. Looks like because we've changed our policy over the years, a lot of it hasn't really been updated, and it still talks about having to pay fees, and where that happens, there's no reference to the fee waiver, and it looks like the county website, we don't really also have a really good landing page for building permits for commercial or business. And we kind of mix everything up. It's permits are pet permits, building permits, event permits, and it's all permits. And it would be so much more handy if we had on our homepage a building permits logo or link that was really obvious. We got some down at the bottom, some little icons. And to be able to add one in there that would say for building permits. And that would go to a landing page that you can say, here's, if you want to do business building permits, commercial, that's where you go. You want to do it for residential, here's where you go. You want to do other stuff, here's where you go. And that way we ease the navigation. We make it so that those individuals, like the flyers here, for instance, there's a web address on your little flyers. Really kind of a long one. I mean, if you're not really going to type that. It would be good to have also a short URL that got mapped to that commercial building permit page. While I'm at it, there's one more thing we can do for our county website. Right now
before you leave that one, I heard a lot of things in there and they require discussion with Marty and company.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I could do unilaterally.
Yeah, okay. it's a mix, and I'll be happy to work with them on that.
Is that something we want to pursue?
I haven't seen it, so I'm not sure.
I've been exploring all morning, and it goes in circles, and it's really confusing.
So when you go to our website, and it has the list of things, permits is one of them.
Permits is not on the homepage.
Or not.
No. And when you go it's under building. It's under community development. I wouldn't think to go there. And when you go to community development,
we also have a search function.
Well, the thing is, we don't want to make them have to search. We want to invite them to, here's how you do it, especially...
I'm saying that for the benefit of Commissioner Milky, mm-hmm. so we understand.
Yeah.
We do have that.
So, okay. So it's evolved over time, and it's would be really good for us to go in and kind of clean it up and organize it and make it so it's much more easy to navigate. If you want a building permit, here's where you go. You want a permit for your cat, there's where you go. You want to be able to have a residential...
Kind of home page.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
The more modern, may I?
Easy to quick, one-click kind of navigation.
Yeah. The more modern websites are the ones that have less verbiage
mm-hmm.
and more, you know...
Direct links.
Very direct links with, mm-hmm. you know, a big, you know, block here that says building permits. Takes you right to it.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot of verbiage because people just get lost in that.
Yeah. Nobody would think to go, if you go for a building permit, to think, I know, community development.
Yeah, they wouldn't.
They don't think like that. And also, we're mixing up commercial with residential. And we really ought to clean strip that out.
Yeah. So maybe we should start
What I'm saying is that this... If I understand that this would require a substantial commitment on the part of community development, and I can work with Marty and carry the message to him, but I cannot implement it unilaterally. That's what I'm saying.
So sure. So you have a role in it, and Marty has a role in it.
On what the mm-hmm. board is wanting.
So we'll start off by calling community development, separate that out, call it the building permits. Then you'll have a commercial building permit and that kind of a breakdown like that.
If you have a landing page for permits, you can navigate from there really easy.
Oh, okay.
Where to go.
I see.
Also, the just the easy navigation of our site, what we don't want to do is change the name of the web, of the URL that goes to a site. We want to be able to keep that, but then have a redundant URL that's simpler, more intuitive, shorter. And so we can include those. We do those routinely at US Digital, for instance, so it makes it convenient for the customer.
We'll take a look at that. But this is really part of a larger discussion regarding
related to web
stuff.
Yeah, related to that larger really discussion, it was probably really have a role in this.
Resources.
So we
long-standing issues.
Yeah, these are varying degrees of complexity, and some are really easy, and some are a little more complex. So we did get the easy ones first.
I understand that, but we have a very extensive website, and we have some longstanding questions regarding maintenance and updates and upgrades.
Let me suggest this.
Substantial commitment on the part of the department that sort of owns the information.
Okay. So here's what I'd like to suggest is that we get Marty, notify Marty
mm-hmm.
of a basic change,
yes,
and have him come back next week, and we'll talk a little bit at a time.
Yeah, actually, I can suggest a simple navigation that would just simply divide it into a few basic categories, so you can just simply associate things that are like together.
I think I get your drift, but I think I need to collaborate with Marty.
Sure. Okay. There's one other really easy thing that we can do, and that's just simply notifying IT. Right now, we have to type in the www dot to get to anything. The IT just can enable so you don't have to do that, even though we assume it's kind of redundant for most businesses that are current these days. Because it should default to know that already.
Well, a couple things. One would be shortcutting our permits and have Marty come up and have a basic idea of what we want to do. And then number two, IT to simplify or do away with mm-hmm. www.
Yeah, and especially in those areas, the most obvious thing, the reason that I bring it up now is because we're the nice little form that you're promoting here for the fee waivers, it goes to a site that's kind of maybe in some ways is doing more harm than good, because it doesn't really, the fee waiver stuff isn't where you expect it. It still talks about fees and how you calculate them and that kind of thing. So there's some leftover stuff in there that could discourage people.
Okay. Anything else?
Let us see. Yes, there is one other thing. I like the progress that we're making on our county website when it comes to the minutes, the records of meetings. And remember we had talked about changing some of those columns to make it more obvious. There's a couple of things in this. One is when CBTV covers our meetings, rather than just simply posting that meeting online as a single file, they're breaking that up into multiple, anywhere from half a dozen to a dozen different segments, and it breaks the flow and makes it it delays the process. It takes days or a week in order to post that. They should just post that as is, one continuous thing. So, and then if we want, we can post a little text right now that says little index that shows what marker is for each of the points if people want to navigate to it. CTRAN has the same problem. We actually in CTRAN have two different meetings that we conduct each month, and they break them up into a bunch of different ones, and then they both meetings, and then sort them alphabetically so they're all mixed up. So the idea is just simply show me the meeting. Don't break it up. Don't edit it. Just put the meeting online. It makes it simpler and faster.
Probably more accurate.
Yeah, it is, because there are pieces that end up missing and segments get deleted by not intentionally, just simply oops.
Seemed like it'd be easier to do that.
And faster, less work.
Let me take a look at that.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to remember who I shared this with. Right now, that grid that shows all of the documents and references, I think it says, there's one column that says ordinances and resolutions. It should say just simply related documents, because on there you can include the resolutions, you can include in the content ordinances, you can staff reports, the WAC, for instance, that has to do with sound, that has to do with the associated documents at a glance, so that everybody has the same tools we do.
Okay. Great. All right. I'm afraid to ask. Anything else?
Nope.
You're kidding me. No. Bill, you have some vacancies.
Yes, we had one more vacancy left over that you asked me to research, and that was the health department's informaticist. There is such a thing.
The what?
Yeah, the health department's informaticist.
Did they finish their definition?
It's a genuine career field. Dr. Melnick has weighed in on this. He feels that they're converting this position from the program manager to an informaticist. And I'll read you this email. They needed to modernize how they manage health information and integrating that information at the state and local level. Health information is sensitive, HIPAA requirements, and requires special care so as not to be compromised. Existing staff cannot do this work, but as they need a professional informaticist, they would like a professional informaticist to do it. To achieve optimal results in the management of this information, if the county would help public health maintain its high standards of service in the face of dwindling resources.
Speaking of dwindling resources, is this in the budget?
Yes, a new position? The funding for that is converting a position. They're taking this position. I don't want A, I want to do B.
And that's
funded from that. So, and this is the, if you want to go to Wikipedia, I copied it off for you. Here is the explanation of health informatics worldwide.
Whoa.
So it is a field.
Read that, Bill.
So it is something that no more cost to us. It's a conversion of one existing employee to, and it is in their, it's their last step for their workforce manning, their workforce planning.
Is it the same pay scale?
Yes.
I find it interesting because a few years back when I asked for how they keep track of healthcare people, they said, well, CMAR does it all.
That's because the clinic people. There's a lot more than just the clinics. That's who does most of the work for people who are coming in.
And the other
clinic.
Thing that was brought up is that I'm not quite sure how they keep track of them or who their patients are.
Tour of clinic part coming in.
Because they don't identify them. In a fashion to find out who they are or where they live. I think they have an address and a name, but they were there was a lack of Social Security numbers, and that's so far enough.
I don't know, Commissioner. That's a separate issue. I don't know.
So I'm not quite sure what they're... I'd like to know more about it. I'd like to know more.
What would you like to know, Commissioner? I don't know what else to give you other than
What records are they keeping?
All health information.
What records do they want to keep?
Immunization records.
In the future that they don't keep now.
They're not, it's not what they're, it's using what they have now and making it technologically more adaptable using state input that they have, national input they have on epidemics, on H1N1, on all kinds of health information that is managed by HIPAA, and the person to do this, they're asking to have a specialist on the staff to be able to do this, and to do this so it doesn't increase the cost, they're converting a position that they don't need anymore to something they do need. And we've asked the departments to look into the reconfiguration aspect, and they have on the second page there, you'll see in the bottom entry is the conversion of this position as their last desire that they would like to do. And as you know, they've been pretty good in cutting their department in half in terms of the FTEs. And I think the more that we can do to support their specific request for this kind of thing enhances their ability to do their job with a lot less people than they've had in the past.
So this is going to enhance their job to allow them to do more with less?
Yes.
Okay. My concern is that they're not stretching out and taking on another task.
No, they're not. This is taking making their existing workload easier and more efficient to accomplish, in my opinion.
Second. Peter Fuller.
They don't have any IT people on staff,
no.
On their staff, do they?
No.
Okay, so this
we have IT people here.
Right. We support them.
We support them, so.
So is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay, it's okay with me.
Thank you. Let me continue.
Mm-hmm.
The work session prioritization. This is our new system. Mm-hmm. I gave you three documents, mm-hmm. P-card audit, mm-hmm. debt policy, and vacant buildable lands model.
Mm-hmm.
Are we good to go to schedule those?
We've been maximized on our ballot measures. So, can you ask that question next week?
Oh, sure.
Because then we got the weekend to do the homework.
Gotcha. Actually,
and plus my railroad trip and the family get together last night. So I have excuses.
My opinion of the P card, even though I don't use it, I understand it's been very, very successful.
Right.
And it's been so successful, some departments would like to expand it.
Yes.
And I think that if it works for them, it's great.
Well,
they don't use it, we don't use it, but...
You're right on, Commissioner. They really don't need for a work session now, unless you want to repeat it, because Mr. Kimsey, he got his dander up, and we had a little meeting
okay.
in there at 10:30 when the originally scheduled thing and Larry presented his findings. And basically, what the findings are is the program, since it's been implemented since 2009, has worked quite well. They found out of 2,473 transactions, one bad apple, and it was a mistake. It was one of the things you can't do. It was a gift card, but it was a gift card as part of a county process. So their major recommendation is slight changes to the policy that you'll see coming back, and that we expand it significantly, because they looked at it. It actually covered $600,000 worth of transaction in that 2,700 different purchases, and they could go as up to $3 million worth of purchases and over 9,000 transactions by using these things in the way that the policy calls for.
And I would think it would be good for each of us to do our homework on that, because that is an area that I want to make sure that Greg Kimsey's office, his whole team,
he's recommending
really
it.
Good at
he's
it.
He's recommending it.
Okay, well,
that was his
I'm
office.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I'll do my
if we had
this
work session, you'd have known that. So you have the report in your, I gave it to you, I have the report, so you please read it and whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. Here are two more. Here are two more requests.
We're saving away.
The vacant buildable lands model is here for you to review. And then you've been very interested in getting incremental payments for property taxes.
Yes. Do we actually got progress?
Here is a formal request for a work session, which I will wait for your decision on. And thirdly, the work session request on the annual dockets and reviews, which we must do by state law. That's the request for that. So I'll be expecting your opinion next week on
so
that.
So if the work session is a state law?
To do annual reviews and dockets. What you have done for all your zoning requests and all your adding to comp plan amendments, those all have to go through this process.
I see.
And that's so that'll come back. I'll come back next week for all that.
Okay. Homework for next week. Okay, got it.
That's and
it.
One more thing. Commissioner Mielke asked for, and Commissioner Stewart validated, and I believe Commissioner Medora agreed that the next question to be asked before we ask to make a decision on the parks issue is for what is the scope of services? What are those scope of services, and how much do they cost?
Yes.
There's Pete's reply. To you, and just to walk you through it, it's each of the positions that he's requesting, and then if you see in the last page in yellow, are each of those by cost, so you know exactly how much it costs. And we'll
is he planning on using the City of Vancouver on this stuff still?
This is the City of Vancouver recommendation. This is using their staff.
That's what we asked Pete as we reconfigure how we deal with the
I like the way you use that
term. That we have more details as to, because we don't do a lot of things today because of the economy and we're not building them. Do we need an architect or designer on hand? And that's kind of what this is going to answer.
Yes, sir. And that's all I have, commissioners.
Mm-hmm. Mary.
I think I have enough.
You got enough to keep you busy for
a
while?
I have enough to do, yes.
And I want to make sure that some of the things that was brought, and we had a little brief informal presentation about the Skills Center putting a branch thing up there on the fairgrounds
yes, sir.
Site and,
yes, sir.
And whatnot. That was just a presentation, just a conversation, but there was something said here a while back that they were still moving ahead as if we had authorized it, and we haven't.
No, you haven't authorized it. You told them to go back and come up with a full-blown proposal.
Yeah, come up with a program.
Yep.
That's where I was going to put my dog kennel. Okay.
That's sort of a collection of feral cats.
Now, if I may offer, there is, and my friend Mary, my friend Holly is not here. There is an island off the coast of Japan that
you're talking about dog kennels?
Don't laugh. There are pictures I will send you where cats outnumber the inhabitants.
Wow.
And the reason they do is because and they come in on ships because it's a shipping port. And they welcome them because they're good luck. The Japanese the villagers there believe that feral cats are good luck.
So
it is well Holly and I will volunteer, even in retirement, I can come back from retirement to fly the number of feral cats that are picked up to this Japanese island on a monthly basis, if you would like. We would like to have first class airfare, if that's possible.
That's to keep that open in motion.
You're a litter box.
I'll make a note of that.
Yeah.
We were working on, I didn't know if we've gone any place. I want to keep pushing on something that you're working on and I worked on, and that's the coffee shop on 88th Street.
Oh, the little, not
Java Depot. We talked a long, long time ago
Java Depot.
About these coffee shops and do something in our permitting process allow them to exist. And I thought this was done 2 years ago, and then all of a sudden she contacted you. And we want to, if we can't allow under current policy these drive-up coffee things, then I think that we should address along the way what we can do to allow them.
Okay.
Just a little supplemental to that.
This is my time. Okay, go ahead.
I'll just say it because it's right on that. We have what appears to be an inconsistency in our policy, and that is the stormwater is important to everything we do. And anytime our policy says we want more impervious surface, we're kind of going in the wrong direction. Our policy says for that kind of thing, the expresso stands, you have to pave it and make it impervious surface. And then that says, well, now that we've created that problem, we're collecting all that water, now we got to create a way to treat all that water.
Yeah.
And in reality, the simpler thing would be just simply to allow gravel to be at that site, and that way the water goes through the gravel where it would go anyway, and saves everybody money and work, and you don't have to solve the problem you just created. So maybe that we have a policy change that's required to do that. Can you help look into that, Jim?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did you read Jim? Don Benton's email on gravel versus...
No, I didn't.
Yeah, we should probably include that before we go forward.
It's amazing. Under our current policy, we don't recognize gravel driveways as impervious surface. That's when we got into the squabble over at Territorial Days in Amboy. They wanted us to pave all that grassy area. So, anyway, I don't know. Maybe we'll bring it up again next week if we haven't got... this thing has been going through heck. But I think it's important that we do something to allow them. I think it's...
Well, we had two action items last week. One was the direct staff to do what you need to do to help this lady.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was to bring forth a policy, a recommendation to help us to be more friendly toward such micro-businesses.
Okay.
I'll see to it.
As we move forward, I see that Yuri, the kennels guy, was issued another citation because he couldn't create zero noise.
Didn't we fix that?
Huh?
We never fixed that?
Well, see, I thought we did, but somehow we issued another citation to him.
No, we never amended dog pound thing to talk about noise level.
And it's coming. That's really strange because, see, we recognize it's impossible to have zero.
Yeah.
We talked about office level noise and whatnot. I think that we need to stop writing citations until we fixed it. And in doing so, that maybe we should go back and look at what we allowed in the kennels noise down to a 50 decibel at night or something like that.
Oh.
In other words,
apply the recent knowledge of our...
Yeah.
Yeah, in other words, the similar thing to the wineries.
Because under existing conditions, I mentioned it before, a dog barking for 10 minutes is in violation, but I can play music for 4 hours. The panhandlers thing is we haven't resolved yet, so I think that we should consider... a work session and or a policy, but we probably need a work session to develop a policy. This was the same gentleman that was considered. I remember he was here testifying a few times, and then Axel and I met with him.
Okay. Axel and I was about
And then we just kind of blew it away. We didn't follow through with it. One time we were talking about reviewing all of our advisory boards and the night meetings that
we did.
Required. Did we finish that?
Yes, sir. And Commissioner Medora, that's all done. You accepted my report, and all of the proceedings, except those who would deal with HIPAA issues, are being put on the website.
Okay.
Did they get audio recordings?
All except the ones that are...
And they put them all on there?
all except the ones that are that have involved HIPAA. And that will put a notation on there that the written that will be available depending on HIPAA requirements.
And then I don't know what's going on in our parks. We were talking about during the conversation about bike patrols and radios of these people that were normally collecting money. I got an email from someone said that they were, when they drove into the park, that the young people were sitting in a car.
No, those are, we can never control what people think they see or what they see of one instance or another. Commissioner Medora had an instance where the person didn't know what they were doing. Mr. Potter, I think you had a two-hour meeting with Mr. Brian Potter about that. You want to read the results of that?
So,
about attendant ambassadors at our park?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was the question?
Well, Commissioner Mielke cited an example where they're sitting in their car.
Well, we had discussed it loosely, and that's when you were talking about making them ambassadors. Mm-hmm. You also talked about a greeter. Somebody would sign up and camp there.
Yeah, actually what this comes down to is I believe that the county needs the freedom to be able to run our own parks. Right now we're having to run them through the city of Vancouver, and we really don't have control of our of the staff. We really can't say, well, you are park ambassadors, and we're going to implement a park host program, and this would allow us to be able to retrain them.
So the people apparently just showed up on site and weren't given direction?
Well, he rehired the same people that were hired as fee collectors, so it without really retraining them. So it basically says if we want to run our parks better, we would hire the kind of staff that would be hired and trained as ambassadors, mm-hmm. and they would be within our direct chain of command here so that we can ensure that our the county parks are run according to our policies.
So one of the things that we talked about, and I was under the impression that these folks would have radios and they would be have reflectors
passed
on and they would be
they
patrolling, and that's what I've told
they do.
People.
They do. Okay, they
well,
do.
I had a meeting with Brian Potter going over the instructions and the that were given to mm-hmm. to them, and it differs from how we would run ours. For instance, I talked with Mike Evans from the Sheriff's Office. He would like the park ambassadors to call 911. Don't just wait for an emergency. If you got somebody that's being belligerent or somebody that's not following the rules, call 911 and they'll go take care of it. But that's not the policy.
And that's not what Mike Evans said. Mike Evans said, we'll put it in priority call, and a priority call on a park is not very high up in priority.
Well,
you didn't mean for the ambassador.
You know what would be a good idea?
No.
If we have Brian and Pete come and do a work session on just what are these people trained to do.
Yeah.
And if that's not up to what the commissioners want, then what should we do in terms of retraining them?
Well, the reason why I know a lot of these are bogus complaints.
Well, some of them are viable, too.
I haven't found the one. I know that Pauline and Red
mm-hmm.
had made a point to drive around to the parks and check it. I've been out there three different times.
Great.
I can find nothing wrong, and so I'm not quite sure. I just want to be reassured that we are under the same understanding of what we're doing.
Let's hear from them. Let's bring them in.
We just bring them at board time instead of
we can bring them in at board time, sure.
Or a short board session.
It would be, actually, I looked at the job description, and the job description looks really good. They're just following their old job description. They're rehired the same people and without really training them for that. So we can do a lot better. Our sheriff's office is very happy to train the staff, but they haven't been trained yet for this time.
The training for an ambassador or greeter would be one that you would help people, direct people.
Mm-hmm.
If things were out of line, you would cautiously say, oh, we don't allow that, and if there's a problem, we mm-hmm. ask for help. I think that's all
exactly.
we need.
Let's bring Brian in. I'll have him brief you on it.
Okay. We already talked about the Humane Society. I got a deal from CJC, and they were wanting to know what about expenses. Some of the things that have been put out there is that somebody told some of their staff, you just put down the full amount allowable while you're there. I said, I know that if you go to Seattle, things are very, very expensive, but if you go to Colville, Washington, you could probably have a big steak breakfast probably for $7.
I have Metro Gasway addressing that for
you. Do you? Yes. I said, in my opinion, I said it'd be wise for them to get receipts.
That's wise counsel.
But I would do a poll of our other staff.
And while you're on that, let me build on that too, because I would not think we would ask staff to do that what we are not willing to do ourselves. Because we as commissioners, if we can either say, well, we're going to cash in on the full allowance that we get maximum allow by law, and we can and do that, mm-hmm. or we can just simply turn in the receipts of what it really costs us.
That's what the complaint was.
Well, what I'm saying
telling
is
telling him to take the full per diem, and that's really not what the instruction is. And so I'm going to have Gasway clarify that.
My point is that we as commissioners should lead by example and turn in the receipts of what our costs actually were, rather than turn in just simply check the box that says, give me the maximum.
I kind of like the maximum.
Okay. Got nothing that says that because you checked the box, you shouldn't have to give your receipts.
Well, what I'm saying is we should turn in our receipts. So because we're going to have taxpayer dollars.
We could do both. And we'll be good. Okay. I was kind of surprised. I've been kind of going back over and trying to understand what's been going on at the fairgrounds as far as management. And it seemed like we seem to have like three managers, Clark County Fairgrounds Site Management Board and the Fairground Board. And I know that from time to time we've gotten into a push-pull thing, nothing real big, but I was wondering what kind of a schematic we had. And in fact, I was a little bit surprised that they weren't county employees, and how it came to my opinion or to my attention was that somebody was complaining because they were having to give the county too much money. And I said, you gotta be kidding me. I said, we're subsidizing the operation of the fairgrounds. We wanted to see it successful, and that individual was more concerned with the fair itself when we're responsible to see the success of the fairground.
Of the site. That's why the title Fairground Site Management Group. When we built the event center, the board directed me to come up with a management oversight scheme mm-hmm. that would do exactly that. That's why we approved the Fairground Site Management Group. The Fair Board will always be the Fair Board. You're never going. They're kind of like Veterans Affairs. You don't touch them. Okay?
Yeah.
You know that well.
Yeah.
However, the chairman of the Fair Board is on the Fairground Site Management Group. That's part of the membership requirement.
Yeah.
Mr. McCauley, the General Services Director by your ordinance, is the chairman of the Fairground Site Management mm-hmm. Group. And since we've had that, we've had no problems with the management of that site. We have minor stuff. But to my knowledge, I haven't received any complaints of that. Mm-hmm. The Board of County Commissioners, that's your liaison to the operation of that entire site, the amphitheater, the event center, and the fair.
Yeah.
Now, those are county employees, and they are county employees paid by the county. I don't know who told you otherwise.
Which one?
At the fairgrounds. The people who work in the event center and John Morrison, those are county employees.
Well, that's what I thought. And he said, no, they're paid from the fair.
No, they're county employees, Commissioner. Justin Koblick, who you talked to, mm-hmm. was a county employee.
I understand he got his check from the Fair Site Management.
Fairground Site Manager Group is your overall oversight committee, and that's a county employee. Yeah. That's a county
so
function.
So they're kind of like, they were overseeing the manager who was John?
Yes.
And then Mark McCauley oversaw, he didn't really oversee. He was a non-voting member on the.
No, he's the chairman. He's the chairman of the Fairground Site Management.
Non-voting.
I don't know what the voting criteria is.
And I thought that we, the county, lack control.
No, that is your control mechanism.
Okay, so I was going to ask for a schematic
Sure, I'll be happy to.
Fairground operation and
you
management.
You bet, absolutely.
Because I thought that maybe the FSMG, or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever it was, would or should be more like an advisory board.
They are. I'll bring you the document.
The impression that they pretty much tell John what to do. And I was concerned about that.
Okay, I'll bring you the schematic, and if there are problems, we can certainly iron them out.
Yeah, I was wanting to understand it better.
Okay, I'll be happy to.
One of the things that I was shocked when Justin was let go, and I said, well, what was that about?
We can go into executive session on that. It's
and
a personal matter.
I had about three different answers to the point of being brushed off.
Well, that's unfortunate, Commissioner. Yeah. That's not appropriate, well, but it should be done in executive session.
All right. Let's see. Advisory board, we already covered it. Well, I think that's all I have, too. Does anybody else want any do-overs?
I haven't thought of it.
No do-overs?
No, sir.
Well, I guess we're done.
Thank you, sir. Oh, actually, I do have a question. You had a...
I'm sorry, we're adjourned.
You were going to put together a summary of all of the... what do you call it? The
membership that's being drafted.
Still? Yeah. Do you have a time frame?
I'll find out.
Thank you.
I'm great. Did I share the pictures of you with you of the water retention pond bill?
Sir?
I know we're pressed for time, so I won't do it now, but I'll do it later.
Okay.
I took a whole bunch of pictures of water retention.
Oh, yeah, you showed me. Yeah. The ones in Spokane?
Yeah.
Yeah, you showed me. Did you share them with Benton?
I haven't shared them with anybody.
All right. Okay.
You're kind of privileged.
Thank you.
Are you going to see the lifeguards?
That's where I showed you the picture of the moose.
Right, that's right.
Did I tell you about the moose in Spokane?
Are we adjourned?
We're adjourned.
We're adjourned.